is all baseball.
They're better than they were a year ago.
This is the Baseball Hour with Tony Maz.
Brought to you by Jackson Lumber and Millwork. Bigelow Tea, Gravely Zero Turn Lawnmowers, The 99 Restaurants, Sing Sang Cocktail in a Can, Win Waste Innovations, and Woodbridge Wines.
On Boston's home for sports, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Story drives one to left. That's deep. Stanton looks up. Hicks looks up. And it goes high off the wall. J.D. Martinez is coming in. He's followed by Bogarts, who's followed by Verdugo. A three-run double for Story. And the Red Sox now lead it 10-6. And there was an express train right behind J.D. Martinez.
I've been saying all along, we have a good team that has to keep working to get better. We play in a tough division, and we've been getting beat in the division, and we know that. But we feel like we can play with everybody. We just have to be better in certain areas. We have to pitch better, hit better, play better defense, run the bases better. And we keep working regardless of the results. You know, it was a good series. We ended up with the split, but now we got to turn the page and play Tampa, who's another great team in the division. You know, we just got to show up and play good baseball.
Okay, so there we go. Alex Cora following last night's win over the New York Yankees at Fenway Park. Red Sox split with the Yankees at Fenway in the four games, which normally I would say gets you nothing. A split gets you nothing. You should be looking to win those series. However, in this particular case, boy, that split felt pretty good, didn't it, Murray?
It did.
All things considered, with the way that thing looked after Friday night, Jackie Bradley on the mound, it looked pretty ugly there. I thought going in, I have to fully admit here, I said to Felger off the air last night, actually, I think I said it on the air. You know, you play blackjack and the dealer has a 10 showing or an ace showing, and you can surrender at that point in time and get a portion of your money back.
Yeah.
I seriously considered whether the Red Sox should surrender entering the series with the Yankees if they could get one win. I thought if the Red Sox could get one out of the four, it would be worth it, and you're better off resting your pitching staff and see you on Monday. Okay? So, obviously, they had to play the games, but you get the idea. I was not remotely confident. And after Friday night, I even texted Mr. Felger and said, I told you.
Well, even the first game, which was only a one-run game, and you were texting because you were out Friday, but I was with you in that Yankee bullpen, that eighth and ninth, again, only a one-run game. I'm like, they have no shot here. So going into those final two games, I'm like, you might win one. Be happy with that.
Okay, so as it turned out, they got two. They got two, and they had two comeback wins against the Yankees to split the series. So here's where we're going to start tonight. I want to talk about the series over the weekend. I also want to talk about the bigger picture, where the Red Sox are, where they're going, what this team's going to look like in the second half, all of that. The division's gone. Okay, the division's gone. It has been gone for some period of time. So I am not going to sit here and dwell over the fact that the Red Sox aren't competing with the Yankees for the division. If you want to bitch about it, you can and you should. Because the gap between these teams should not be this big. Now, that doesn't mean the Red Sox have played poorly this year. The Yankees are having a great year. But if you want to tell me that's embarrassing that the American League East isn't really a competition this year, I am not necessarily going to argue with you. I don't like that part of it either. But my question with you as it pertains to the Red Sox is this. If they hit their ceiling, how good do you think they are? If they hit their ceiling, do you think they're good enough to make a run at it? And the reason I ask you this is because if your answer is no, well, then you can't really bitch at ownership and upper management for not going out and making acquisitions at the deadline. If you think their ceiling isn't good enough, well, then bite the bullet, make a half-ass trade, and then see what happens. Fine, no big deal. I happen to think the ceiling of this team is very, very high. So with the right moves at the deadline, you go get yourself a first baseman, maybe add a right-handed reliever, put Garrett Whitlock back in the pen, I think you're in business. And I have said this consistently. I thought the Red Sox should compete for the division title this year. They're not going to do that because, in part because the Yankees have run away with it. And I should say, in large part, through no fault of the Red Sox, head-to-head, the Red Sox are 3-4 against the Yankees. It's not like they're 0-7. And the Yankees have just been blowing doors on everybody. So if the Yankees go out and win 115, 120 games, 110, you weren't going to catch them anyway.
Right, there's only so much you can do about that. So
okay, so if a team runs away and hides, just like the Red Sox did in 2018, Well, that's just the way it goes. Okay, now you try to beat them in the playoffs. But I would also tell you that I thought this team, if they made the right moves at the right time, could vie for a championship this year. I thought that was in play. And so my whole argument for the Red Sox at the beginning of the year was, nope, you've got a good team, figure the bullpen out, the rotation will be fine, pick up some pitching at the deadline, and then see what they look like in the second half, and maybe you'll be championship caliber. I still feel the same way. So, depending on whether these things all come through, and I used to have a little formula, Murray, but at the start of each season, that the number of ifs related directly to the likelihood of you winning. The more ifs, the lower the chance. So there are a bunch of ifs I have now, but I actually think some of these could come through. If Sale comes back and regains his form from 3 or 4 years ago, which I don't think is that far-fetched. If Whitlock goes to the bullpen, if Nathan Eovaldi comes back, and if the Red Sox make a trade or two at the deadline and fortify that roster, you can play with anybody.
And I would agree with you, too, because especially because I think the American League is relatively down. That Central's worthless. Houston's legit. But all the best teams are seemingly in the AL East. I would even throw Baltimore in there. I don't know if you've been paying attention to what the hell
they've won eight in a row.
Yeah, no, they've been kind of nasty. So, yeah, they can. And all those ifs you just went through, I think the most improbable one, unfortunately, Maz, is them adding a real first baseman or doing anything real at the deadline. The Chris Sale thing, I think you're generally right with your theory of the 2 years removed from Tommy John. So it wouldn't shock me if Sale came back and you got, like, really good Chris Sale. How long does that last? Who knows? But I think, you know, initially he'll probably look really good. But of all the things listed, I just don't see them, because of what they did last year, the lack thereof, them doing anything major in terms of additions at first base or in the outfield or adding to the bullpen.
And that should concern you if you're a fan, because the question is, does ownership and upper management believe in the team ceiling the way you do? Okay, that's really the question. Do they believe in the ceiling the way you do? If you do. Again, if you look at him, like Tony from Stoneham, who calls the show all the time and called Felger and Maz today, Tony from Stoneham said this team's going nowhere. So I would say to Tony and Stoneham, well, then don't bitch if they do nothing at the deadline. Like, if that's what you believe, then why would you invest in a team that you think is going nowhere? I don't think they're going nowhere. I think they have a chance. I felt that way at the beginning of the year. I feel that way now. I believe they have a chance. Now, there are a lot of things I don't like. I don't like the fact that they've played 2 years without a first baseman. I don't like the fact that they've been basically, you know, looking for a closer now for a couple of years. And that they've been trying to get bullpen help for a good solid year going back to the trading deadline of a year ago. Those are the things I don't like. But do I believe in the talent on this team? And I would say more so this year than last year. My answer is yes. And the other element that has to come into play when you're talking about where the Red Sox are going and whether they're capable of making a run is the farm system. So you now have better depth down there. You should be able to make a trade without forfeiting or mortgaging or going back on your principles, for lack of a better term. And I'm not articulating that very well. But if the Red Sox are married to this idea of building and improving and, you know, continuing to build from within, just because you make a deal at the deadline doesn't mean you're turning against that. I'm not asking you to give up Tristan Casas or Brian Bello or Marcelo Mayer. All of whom, by the way, are now in the top 30 prospects in Major League Baseball, according to Baseball America. No one's asking you to do that. But what people do want to see is an investment in the team. Show that you believe in the team. That's what people want to see. I know that's what I want to see, and I can sure as hell tell you that's what the people in uniform want to see. And not because I've talked to anybody in uniform about it, but because it just stands to reason. I think their ceiling is high. Their ceiling is high. Don't kid yourself about that. 617-779-0985. We'll kick it off tonight with Tom and Dartmouth. Tom, go ahead.
How's it going? Yeah. So I don't watch a ton of Red Sox games, but I definitely tuned into the last two against the Yankees. Dahlbeck's got to go. I remember he was up, I forget what inning it was, but the bases were loaded, and he strikes out. I don't know much about him, but I think as far as hitting goes, he's somewhat known for his power. You can't just hit a little blooper to the center fielder to get a run home. Thank you. I'll hang up.
Okay, so, Tom, listen, the at-bat you're talking about, if I remember right, was at the end of the sixth inning last night. They had a chance to, or the, you know, in the middle of the sixth inning last night, they had a chance to blow the game open. Aroldis Chapman is all over the place. Dahlbeck comes to the plate, has really a horrendous at-bat.
No outs.
I mean, was there nobody out at that time?
There was nobody out. He was the first out.
Okay, I couldn't remember if there were no outs or one out, Murray.
No, there was none.
So nobody out. Okay, horrendous at bat. Swung at two pitches badly out of the strike zone. Down and in both times to get himself out. If he just takes the walk, they score. Okay, they score. And I find it inexcusable that the Red Sox are now going on 2 years without a legit major league first baseman. Bobby Dahlbeck, God bless him, tries, and to his credit, has worked on his defense. Okay, and I've been grumbling about Dahlbeck a lot for a year and a half. But I will tell you, it's really not about Dahlbeck. Dahlbeck is who he is, and he's improved. He's improved, although the home runs this year have not come. I get more alarmed when I read a comment from an anonymous Red Sox official at the end of last season in a story written by Peter Gammons that the Red Sox believed that Bobby Dahlbeck could be a 40 home run guy. What's he got, six? Okay, and the defense still is better. His defense is better, but it's not good. Franchi Cordero's not an everyday first baseman. For the Red Sox to have no first baseman, to me, is frankly embarrassing. Danny is in his car, I'm guessing. Danny, what do you got?
Yeah, so let's do the crazy caller take of the day. Story over to first. And KK or Jeter combination of and Arroyo at second. I'll hang up and listen.
Okay, not interested. Thank you. Not interested because you're not any better. You're not any better. Your second base, no. I want a real first baseman is what I want. Now I'm going to move Story away from first baseman. He's a Gold Glove caliber second baseman. The one thing he's done consistently after the first few weeks, maybe month, is play terrific defense. Now, I happen to think Trevor Story is your classic trick-or-treat player. I don't like the inconsistent nature of his output offensively, but his defense has been terrific. Okay, so I'm not going to get on Story for the defense. I'm not moving him there. And, you know, give him another position to learn and make you weak at second base. I'm not doing that. We'll continue with your phone calls. And also, finally, a significant contribution for the Red Sox last night from someone who has been suspiciously quiet, has not taken a lot of criticism, and should be taking more. We'll tell you who that is when we come back on the Baseball Hour.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
This is the Baseball Hour with Tony Maz on 98.5, The Sports Hub.
It's a high fly ball into right field, and for a moment...
So Vasquez doubles J.D. Martinez, now with the chance to tie it and break a long homerless streak at Fenway. And this ball is rocketed into right. Did he do it? Judge will not get it. The streak without a homer is over, and the game is tied.
Saw the distance covered on this one, 392. The home run from J.D. Martinez, not waiting a second. Another attempt at a fastball up in the zone. J.D. keeps his hands up. Barrel stays through the zone long enough. He ties this ball game.
First home run at Fenway since June 14th.
Big home run by J.D. Martinez last night, tied the game at six. That's an important win. And not for the standings or anything else, but just for the morale and overall feeling around the ball club. It was an important win last night. The one on Saturday was as well. Red Sox came back in both of those games against a good Yankees bullpen. And don't kid yourself, that Yankee bullpen stacked. Holy crap, are they good. Wow, what a set of arms in that bullpen. And that should be, by the way, the number one reason anyone picks the Yankees. Because I think the Yankees are still a little trick-or-treatish offensively. And Stanton has stabilized some, certainly since, call it a year ago, year and a half ago. Stanton has gotten better. Judge is having a terrific year. Rizzo's really made a difference in that lineup over the last year, going back to the All-Star break. But that bullpen, ridiculous. And the Yankees made a couple of strategic moves that have really impacted their defense. So the shortstop's a good player, although he made a big error last night. I mean, good defensive player. Donaldson's been a good addition to bring some intensity to that team. The catcher, Trevino, excellent. You know, good change there. And I mean, good change for the Yankees. So they have a good team. They're a well-rounded team. It's a good team. That bullpen is awesome. It is awesome. And you beat them twice. That is no small thing. I will get back to your calls. Frank is in Boston on the trade deadline. Go.
Yeah, hi. So at the deadline, I'd like them to do either one of two things. I want a real deal for a real first baseman and a real reliever. And if they don't do that, I want them to sell everything. And although I might not like them doing that, I would respect that because I feel like at least it's sticking to a principle.
Okay.
What I don't want is to be lied to and strung along like someone in a bad relationship.
Okay, so Frank, let me ask you this then, just quickly before I let you go. Is what you just presented was two extremes, right? One is the high extreme of
yes.
Pick a side. What do you think they're going to do?
I think they're going to do what I don't like.
Something in the middle.
Something in the middle. And I just, you know exactly what that is. It's PR, and it's not an attempt to win. And I'm done with being strung along.
Okay, so again, so to me, the area in the middle, though, to me is a little bit bigger than it might be for you. So you say strung along or go for it. Well, I'm not giving up Cassis. I'm not giving up Brian Bello. I'm not giving up Marcelo Mayer. And again, not that many people out there care about this sort of thing, but just to relay the news to you, Baseball America comes out with prospect lists every year. And they update them through the course of the year. The Red Sox have three in the top 30 in baseball now. The three I just named. Cassis, Bayo, Mayer. I'm not trading any three of those guys. But are you really going to be all that broken up if you're a Red Sox fan, if they trade Josh Winkowski or Connor Siebold? Or dare I even say Jarren Duran? Is anyone going to be that broken up if they trade Jarren Duran or Cutter Crawford? Of those four people I just named, you know who I would be most inclined to keep? Crawford. Because I think Crawford's cut fastball is the best weapon in that group. With Siebold's changeup is really good, but in and of itself, it's not enough, not with the way he throws. 91 miles an hour, he'll get tattooed. But I think with Crawford's fastball velocity and his cut fastball, he can actually help you somewhere. End of the rotation, bullpen, whatever it is, we'll figure it out later. So, but even him, at the end of the day, I would move him too. So, you know, this idea that you have all these guys coming through the system, Jeter Downs, if you can increase their value, great. It doesn't mean you have to keep them all. Blake's in Holden. Blake, go.
Hey, man, so the deal I want to see the Red Sox make is get a first baseman like C.J. Cron and a reliever like Daniel Bard. I think they can do that in just one trade and trade, like you said, Crawford and a prospect like Matthew Lugo or Brandon Bonacci, someone who has value, but this might not contribute to them at a major league level because they don't have space for him. So I want to know what you thought of that.
Okay, so Daniel Bard, with all due respect, he's a great story, been there, done that. And, you're going to introduce Daniel Bard into the American League, put him back in Boston, and put him in a playoff race? That feels like a disaster waiting to happen. So I don't love that idea. I do want bullpen help. I do want a first baseman. I think the Red Sox have the capacity to do both. And look, for all the criticism I've launched at Chaim Bloom and at the organization for the way they handled last year's deadline, they did get a good deal on Kyle Schwarber. Now, he didn't play for 2 weeks, but when he got in there, he was good. He had an impact on their lineup, and he did help them get to the LCS. So at the end of the day, they were right on Schwarber. Now, again, I think if he had gotten here earlier, maybe they'd won the division and maybe they'd have been home in the American League Championship Series. I don't know. I'm guessing, okay? And I'm clearly hunting and finding the negative in it. But if they could make those moves last year, and I say those moves because they also got Austin Davis and Hansel Robles, and I would tell you that on Schwarber they won. On Davis in the longer term, they probably won, although he gave them very little last year. On Robles, I'm going to call that one a loss, even though they didn't give up anything. He helped them for a little while, but I also think it gave them an excuse and a false sense of security in their bullpen this year. Alex is in Connecticut. Alex, go.
Hey, Maz. Actually, the caller just now kind of stole my thunder. I think, and I don't know, you didn't say anything about it, but I'd love to see them go after C.J. Cron. His contract is expiring. He's got another, like, year and a half, and that would just be enough time for Cassis then to come up after his contract's done. He'd be a great addition, C.J. Cron. I'm from Colorado.
Okay, so you said he's up in a year and a half. He's up at the end of 2023. I doubt they're going to make that kind of move. And think, and so, again, I'm not telling you I don't like Cron or that he wouldn't fit or what have you. But what I would tell you is that they went into 2022 and wouldn't commit to a veteran first baseman because Cassis is on the way. So they didn't want to commit there, and they were going to ride it out with Dahlbeck. So now all of a sudden they're going to commit to 2023. I don't see it. I don't see it. And I would love to see a veteran guy here, though. Look, I keep saying Anthony Rizzo. People get mad at me because I have the audacity to mention a Yankee. But you tell me, the Yankees instantly got better when Anthony Rizzo joined that team last year. Instantly. Do you realize since Rizzo joined the Yankees, they're 86-42. Okay, that's 108 win pace. That goes back to the All-Star break of last year. 86-42. Meanwhile, the Red Sox are still dropping pop-ups in the infield, still making mistakes there, and still getting relatively no offense from the position. So, and Rizzo, by the way, didn't cost a ton at the deadline in the trade, and they re-signed him as a free agent for 2 years and $32 million. I think you can find a place for Rizzo. And remember, if he were still here, and you'd say, well, what about Cassis? You know, J.D. Martinez is going to be a free agent at the end of the year. You can make Cassis the DH for the first year. Because Rizzo's a good first baseman. Although there was a ball last night he should have picked out of the dirt. Colin's in a car. Colin, go ahead.
Oh, man. Tony, just hearing about the Rizzo numbers just makes me sick to my stomach. I've always wanted him back. I mean, my biggest urgency surrounding this trade deadline is got to do with the fact that I have no confidence that they're going to do the right thing with Xander and Devers. I just feel like that this is going to be a way worse team next year in that lineup. They don't have the way to replace those guys, and they're just going to let them both go. So, I mean, I'm weirdly in a win-now mentality. I don't want to give up top talent, but I just don't see the future as bright with just having some prospects, you know, landing on the top 30 list.
Colin, what if they keep Devers?
I mean, I feel a lot differently, but I just have zero confidence they're going to do that. I mean, I haven't heard anything to say that they're going to make a change to their mentality of extending him. And I feel like Devers is really closely tied to the Bogart situation, so it may not even be up to them.
Okay, look, that's fair. Devers and Bogarts are close. I think at the end of the day, if Rafael Devers is going to follow Xander Bogarts around everywhere, that's asking a lot. I mean, where's he going to get his money? So a team's going to sign Bogarts as a free agent this fall, and they're going to sign him for, call it, I don't know, 6, 7, 8 years at $30 million per. And then the following year, they're going to sign Devers at 10 years and give him $30 million? That's a lot of money for anybody to take on. The Dodgers, I suppose, could do something like that. But I think and what I'm saying is the same team, okay? So if you're going to lose both of those players and you lose them both to the same team, well, then that'll be really frustrating. The greater threat, though, is that you lose them to different teams, in which case I would say I would hope the Red Sox would identify which one of those guys they want and which one they'd be more apt to keep. To me, the answer is Devers for lots of reasons. The age, and he hits left-handed. Okay? That's why I would keep Devers if it came to that. Buddy Tommy and Lynn, what do you got, Tommy?
What's up, Maz? What's up, Murray? This is what I got to say about the Red Sox. They got to add pitching. They need pitching, bullpen help. and they do need depth in the first baseman. They do need a first baseman. They hadn't had one in a couple of years, Maz. What's going on with this team? I want to hear your opinions, and I'll hang up and listen. Love you guys. Have a great rest of the night.
You too, Tommy. So, look, the first base situation to me is, frankly, is one of the more embarrassing things that has happened in the last year and a half, that the Red Sox don't have a real major league first baseman to play the position. And they don't. And on top of it, they're not getting offense there either. So Schwarber was a free agent at the end of the year. And I have railed against Schwarber. When they signed him, I said he's not a fit. They need a first baseman. Where are you going to put him? But if you're asking me, would I rather have Franchy Cordero, Kyle Schwarber, or Bobby Dalbec playing first base, I tell you, the defense is a wash. It's bad no matter what, so I'll take the offense. As it is, the Red Sox are getting neither. The Yankees, by the way, are getting both. Okay, Rizzo's hitting for a low average, but at least he's hitting home runs. Dalbec and Cordero's hitting for a higher average, but Dalbec's hitting for a low average isn't even hitting homers. Murray's got your headlines.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Now more baseball and more Mavs.
Okay.
This is the Baseball Hour with Tony Mavs on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
It's a high fly ball into right field, and for a moment Arroyo couldn't find it. He still can't. He can't find it. It's way behind him.
Oh.
Two runs will score. Hicks is in. Trevino is in. Here comes Gallup pounding around. A play at the plate. Here's the tag. He is out at home. Arroyo never saw the thing.
Oh, what a time to not be able to see a fly ball. And I thought it wasn't deep enough because I was saying, why is he there? I thought that ball was hit farther than that. And it was. He's standing there with his arms up. That ball's way over his head. Nobody's there to help. He said that ball's 50 feet from him. And he goes and gets it. The only thing good that came out of there is they threw out Gallo with the plate.
Oh, look at the panic. Absolute panic on Christian's face. They're screaming, I can't see it.
Luckily, he gets it in to get it out at the plate, but my goodness.
I would call that one rock bottom for the Red Sox in this weekend series with the Yankees, except it wasn't. After that is when Jackie Bradley got on the mound. He had to pitch in that game. Red Sox got thumped on Friday night. It wasn't a pretty weekend. Murray, did you see any of the first two games?
I did, yeah.
What'd you think of those performances?
Well, again, Thursday, when it got to the eighth and ninth inning, it's only a one-run game, but it might as well have been a million because the way the Yankee bullpen was that night, the Red Sox weren't going to touch them. And then that thing on Friday night, I checked out early because it was an embarrassment. I went back in once I saw Twitter blowing up that Jackie Bradley Jr. was pitching. I was like, oh, let's see this. But that was a clown show.
That was the highlight of the game. Bradley pitching was the highlight of the game. It was the thing people were most interested in. I can tell you this. I always use my kids or my father as my barometers.
Sure.
My father's a big baseball fan. But the kids had zero interest in the Red Sox game until I told them Jackie Bradley was pitching, and then they wanted to see. Like, that all of a sudden meant something to them. The defense, and I don't blame them. I'm not picking on them. But the whole point is that, you know, it was a novelty. It was something, oh, that was kind of cool, something different. Different is good. We're all for different. But the defense, the first two games, do I have to remind anybody of what happened on Thursday night? Go ahead, Kevin Maggiore.
And popped up. Here comes Franchi. He wants to take it, but it's going to drop in.
God.
Runner down to second base, and a run comes in. There's no one there at third. He almost went. And that falls in to make it 6-2. A pop-up on the infield that goes uncaught.
Wow.
And Hicks just waltzed home.
You don't see that every day. I mean, this ball's popped up. I don't know what happened. Maybe he took his eye off it for a second, couldn't pick it back up. That's it.
Not sure you can blame
the
wind.
The sky
right?
is kind of weird. It's not all completely dark. That's it.
That's an RBI double. That's what it's called there.
Okay, that one actually got changed, I think, to an error, but I think it got changed back. Did I hear that right? So the fact that Franchi Cordero missed an infield pop, and by the way, Murray, do you have an opinion of those two plays, Arroyo and Cordero, which one was worse?
I thought the Arroyo one was worse.
Really?
Actually. Yeah. Okay. I don't know. They were both horrific.
Well, no, so I'll tell you what. So visually, the Arroyo one was worse.
Yeah.
Visually.
Yeah. I mean, the other one's so routine. But I just think that Franchi Cordero is kind of a boob.
Okay, so there is that too.
You know, so that's, but that Arroyo thing, the visual of it, I mean, I watched it just for laughs on Twitter a million times, but that was horrific.
Coach, so again, this is one of those where, as a fan, if you are looking at those two plays and you say Franchi Cordero sucks, or you say Christian Arroyo blows, or why are they in the positions they are in? Franchi Cordero is not a major league first baseman. Christian Arroyo is not a major league right fielder. Now, you could argue that they both have a place in the major leagues, and they do. Franchi Cordero's improved a lot. But when he's your everyday first baseman, or at least part of the platoon, and Christian Arroyo is a solution for you in right field at Fenway Park, where, dare I say that historically, is one of the toughest right fields to play, and that over the years, the Red Sox have made a point of finding people to play right field at Fenway who are exceptional outfielders. So whether it was, and I say exceptional, above average, Trot Nixon played out there, Darren Lewis played out there, Mookie Betts played out there, Hunter Renfro played out there, not as well as everyone thinks, but capable enough. But now, you're getting guys who don't even have experience of playing the position. Like, that's where you should feel the frustration. Go back to the call. Sean's in Salem. Sean, go ahead.
Man, first base and leadoff spot has been an embarrassment all year. It was evident a month into the season first base was a major issue. And on May 31st, the Yankees picked up Matt Carpenter after being released by Texas. It cost them $1 million. The guy's hitting 320 with a 1,200 OPS and has as many home runs as Cordero and Dahlbach combined. I thought that's what Bloom's specialty is, like identifying these guys, diamonds in the rough. And for $1 million, he could have filled all these problems or helped to stop all these problems that we talked about. And the second thing Bloom's known for is being a numbers guy, right? Yet he's sending out a rookie pitcher in back-to-back starts against the same team. History tells us over 20 years that pitchers have huge disadvantage in this spot. And I know he knows this because it was a big reason why they started to go with openers in Tampa within the division. It's just, it seems like he's flying blind and not paying attention, like he's overwhelmed or something.
Okay.
And it's just so frustrating.
Yeah, so Sean, listen, I get you. The one thing I will say with regard to Brian Bayo, and that's who Sean's talking about, who's pitching tonight, will make his second career big league start. His first was also against Tampa Bay. At the moment, I don't know how much flexibility the Red Sox really have in their rotation. I mean, they are kind of banged up. So, and this isn't getting enough attention, and it probably should. One of the reasons I didn't think the Red Sox were going to win a game this weekend against the Yankees is because, did you look at the starting pitching? When you really went right through it, Connor Siebold, Josh Winkowski, Cutter Crawford, you're throwing guys who are, you know, 4A players or just budding major leaguers now. I'm not sure how good any of them really are. So the fact that Bayo is going again against Tampa Bay, as opposed to who? Like, what are the options at this stage? So they're short on options, which again is why you should be happy about the wins over the last couple of nights. Now, there was a lot to look at with the Red Sox as it relates to the bigger picture and say, well, they can't beat good teams. Can we just touch on Nick Pivetta here for a second? So, Murray, didn't you say, you said something earlier today about how Pivetta has been your best starter this year, right?
Or no, something. I said he turned into a pumpkin recently.
Okay, so I just didn't remember the context of the comment, but you're not wrong. So the question
was, yeah, I said he was one of your best starters, if not the, but he's turned into a pumpkin.
Okay, and so the question then becomes, well, why? Like, what? He had this big run, and did he just go cold? And then, you know, he started out bad, and then he pitched well, and then it went bad again, right? Just for a couple of starts now. It's not, you know, it's not.
Yeah, we're not going on a month.
Right. So I would say, well, bad start, good in the middle, and then now he's skidding again. So it's probably just the ups and downs of a season, except that, you know what that lines up with? The schedule. So early in the year, the Red Sox played in the division. Nick Pivetta pitched poorly. Then the Red Sox left the division. Nick Pivetta pitched well. Now they're back in the division, and Nick Pivetta has pitched poorly again. So I was looking this up. Pivetta's ERA against the Yankees this year, two starts, 10.00 ERA.
Oh, geez.
Nine innings, 12 hits, 10 runs, four homers, five walks, and nine strikeouts. Okay, that's in two starts against the Yankees. Against Tampa Bay this year, he's made one outing. His ERA is 11.12. Against Toronto, he's made three outings. His ERA is 5.52. He has given up two home runs to the Blue Jays. Against teams with a winning percentage of less than 500, losing teams, Nick Pivetta is 6-2 with a 2.4 ERA. Against teams with a winning record, Nick Pivetta is 2-4 with a 6.08 ERA. So the ERA is almost four runs higher. It's called 3.5, 3.6, 3.7 against good teams and much better against bad teams. And so maybe it's that simple that Nick Pivetta is just a middle of the rotation, end of the rotation guy. I mean, if you think about it, when you examine it like that against winning teams or losing teams, Pivetta is exactly in the middle of a rotation. He's a number three starter. Which what you want from a number three starter is a 500 pitcher, something close, maybe a little above 500, who can take the ball every 5 days and just is a workhorse. And I think that that's what Pivetta pretty much is. So maybe it has nothing to do with the ups and downs of a season. Maybe it has everything to do with the opposition. Anthony's on the Cape. Anthony, what do you got?
What's up, Matt? Yeah, a couple weeks ago I called and said trading J.D. Martinez should be on the table, and he's on the decline, and he hasn't got the job done for a middle-of-the-order bat. Matt McCarthy said it was the worst take in the history of the radio station. Okay, that guy wouldn't know a hot take if it took a dump in his head.
Okay, so
I think everybody's waking up to the reality.
Anthony, I'm just going to put you on hold. Don't hang up. Okay, so let's just keep it to Martinez and not Matt McCarthy. For whatever reason, you have some little feud going with Matt, and I would say just let it go, okay? Matt knows his baseball. He knows his stuff. If his opinion differs from yours, so be it. That's okay. But as it pertains to J.D. Martinez, don't you think it would be a hold on, though. Don't you think it would be a really bad message if they traded away their DH in the middle of the season?
Of course, but Maz, you don't understand. It's not about what Anthony on the Cape says. It's about what Heim Bloom says. And when you're president of baseball operations or whatever title he has, when that little rumor got spread by Peter Gammons, he kind of floated it out there through Heim Bloom, that's a good sign that this guy gets it and he's paying attention. He's not looking at, oh, like Matt McCarthy, he's a 310 batting average with a 900 OPS. He must be great. No, look a little deeper. Actually watch the games and see this guy's not getting the job done. It's good. It's good that he came out of it a little bit over the weekend. We need that. We need this guy, Tony. So, wake up. Get a fire started under him.
Yeah, so listen, again, you're not going to have to convince me of that. What's he got, 8 home runs, 9 home runs, single digits? The season's, you know, 85 games old, so he's on pace to hit 17 home runs or something like that? Nowhere near good enough for a guy that you need to hit 30. I'm not sitting here lobbying for J.D. Martinez. I'm just telling you the reality of you're going to trade a guy away in the middle of a season? And if Heim Bloom does that, if the Red Sox do that in a year in which right now they're a playoff team, well, then that to me would be unprecedented. That's like the old, what did they call it in Chicago with the White Sox that year? The white flag deal? When they traded, they were in contention for a playoff spot like two games out of the wild card, and they basically sold off all these parts? Now that would have been a disaster. All right, can I just play this now and get this out of the way? Last night I was on the K-Rod simulcast of the ESPN Sunday night game. I don't know if you happen to see any of it, Murray.
I saw some of Clemens, and then I ended up just staying on the regular broadcast. I'm sorry, Mess.
No, don't apologize.
I thought I missed you because I figured Clemens was like, you know, if you went after Clemens, that means to me that you're the star, right? Like Clemens would be the opening act. I figure Clemens was on for the rest of the thing, so I didn't stay.
So I think their logic, because Murray, you're using good logic on this. I think their logic was that because Red Sox and Yankees games run so late that by the time they get to the ninth inning, or eighth inning, there's not going to be anyone left.
Yeah.
So they buried me in the eighth inning, and I was there for like 5 minutes because it was a fast inning. But there was a little history here and this sort of thing. So, well, here's what it sounded like when I was on.
And we're excited to bring in our good friend, well, my good friend, he doesn't like Alex, and that's Tony Maserati, big afternoon drive personality in Boston, longtime writer for the Boston Herald as well. Tony, how you doing?
I'm good. How you guys doing?
We're doing great. You want Alex says, say whatever you want about him right now. Here he is, almost face to face.
Okay, so look, hate is a strong word, okay? I don't know that I hate anybody on the planet, but I will say that if he feels that way, I should tell you, Alex, that most people feel that way after I talk to them. So I don't know that it was anything exclusive to you is probably the better way to say it.
So I never hated Alex Rodriguez, like personally. Just I kind of hated his shtick, his image. I thought it was kind of forced and fraudulent and phony. But as a guy, he always treated me well enough. I have no issue with Alex Rodriguez that way, but I just wanted to get that out there. And that was what I played for you was probably about two-thirds of the appearance. I was literally there for like 2 seconds, and then the thing was over. But I do give Rodriguez credit for this. He was able to laugh about it. He was able to laugh about it. When they asked me to go on, I said yes. And Kay said, when I told A-Rod, he was all happy. He said, oh, that's excellent. He hates me.
Yeah.
So there you go. 617-779-0985. We will touch on the upcoming week for the Red Sox, which is very, very important and potentially very, very promising. We'll tell you why when we come.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
This is the Baseball Hour with Tony Maz on 98.5, The Sports Hub.
I will sneak in another call or two, and then I'll tell you why you should be paying attention this week with the Red Sox. And it relates to the question of the night, which is, do you believe they can make a run? Well, how high is their ceiling? If you're a fan of this team, how high is your ceiling? How much would you invest at the deadline? And if the answer is very little, well, then don't bitch at ownership and management when they don't invest. Like, if you don't think they're that good, then they're not that good. Then why trade away anything at the deadline? I hate to sound like, who's the caller's name? Frank in Boston. Who said, you know, he wants to be all in or all out. They're going to straddle it in all probability. But if they don't do enough at the deadline and you don't believe in them, then what are you bitching about? Don't bitch about that. So I happen to think their ceiling is really high. And I'll tell you why in a second here. But Steve's in Rockland. Steve, go.
Maz, thanks for taking my call. I'll be quick. Maz, I'm trying to allege that Jackie Bradley is a modern-day Paul Blair of the old Orioles. Okay, what's your opinion? I'll hang up and listen, Maz.
Okay, that's not a horrible comparison. You know, Blair was the game was different back then. A tremendous defensive outfielder who couldn't hit. I think he ran better than Bradley does. But, you know, Bradley runs well enough. Bradley might even be a better offensive player than Blair. I'd have to go back and look that up. But the game's just not the same. And I'm not sure Blair got quite the hype that Bradley got. Okay, if that makes sense. I think people have oversold Bradley. Quickly, Nick's in Westport. Nick, go ahead.
Hey, what's up, Maz? I'll be as quick as I can be. So I think that the Red Sox are good enough. They kind of proved it to me this weekend against the Yankees that they can add while still maintaining their high-end prospects. So guys like Siebold, Winkowski, names of that sort, you need to trade and actually get guys like you said before, CJ Krohn would be a good addition, or Josh Bell, or some bullpen hope. You could get Krohn and Daniel Bard out of Colorado if you want, but keep the high-end prospects, get rid of the bum ones, and get actual bullpen help in here and first baseman so I don't have to watch Franchy Cordero anymore and Christian Arroyo in right field.
Okay, so look, at the, to me, what I want to see in the bullpen, and they won't do it. I'd be surprised if they did. Go out and get some a guy with some term on his contract. Like, would it kill you to have a guy in here who is signed for next year? And by the way, maybe we'll touch on this tomorrow. Because I don't know if Matt Barnes is ever coming back. Have you heard word one about Matt Barnes? Has anyone heard word one about Matt Barnes?
That's the first time I've heard that name in weeks.
Okay, right. So he's like he vanished. Vanished from the planet.
Right, like witness protection program type stuff.
I mean, so he's not coming back to help. And you signed him to a big two-year contract. I say big, you know, for a middle reliever or a setup man. But, you know, they're getting nothing out of that. So, look, with regard to this week, I think you could start to get a glimpse here of how the Red Sox foresee this thing as they come out of the break. Go into the break and come out. Brian Baio pitches tonight. That's out of necessity, but you get another look at the kid. Sale will come back. Nathan Eovaldi is going to start on Friday, Murray. Is that what you said against the Yankees?
Yeah, that's the word.
Okay, and Eovaldi historically against the Yankees is a good matchup. Garrett Whitlock could be back and in the bullpen before long. So when you come out of the break, your pitching staff could be back intact. The deadline will be coming up. If your pitching staff gets healthy and you make an addition, I think he can play with anybody. We began the night on this program by playing a cut from Alex Cora where he said, we think we can play with anybody. I agree with him. If they're healthy and if they invest at the deadline. Tim McCone and Brendan Glasheen coming up here for the balance of the night. Everybody, we'll catch you tomorrow on the Baseball Hour.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.